dedicated to enhancing the local Champaign community on the web at ratioarchitects.com. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where the new year brings performances by mask, mime, and storytelling artist Michael Cooper, the pageantry of the British military ensembles The Black Watch and the Band of the Welsh Guards, and a U of I student production of the Shakespeare classic As You Like It. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Essayist and editor Joshua Wolf Schenck is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. He says our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, was challenged by depression. It afflicted him throughout his life, shaping his life, and while it was from time to time debilitating, causing him to contemplate suicide, Schenck reports that Abraham Lincoln drew strength from his depression. Schenck, who serves on the advisory council of the Abraham Lincoln Bicentennial Commission, is the author of Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. In addition to examining Lincoln's life through the lens of his melancholy, the book looks at the subject of depression, both topics informed by Schenck's own experience with depression. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. I welcome your questions and comments for our guest. Join us with a telephone call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Joshua Wolf Schenck's work has appeared in many publications, including Harper's Magazine, The New Yorker, and The Atlantic Monthly. He is on the faculty at New School University. And his book, Lincoln's Melancholy, it is published by Houghton Mifflin. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Joshua, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. This book began, it grew out of an essay you came across in 1998 about suicide. The author, a sociologist, referenced Lincoln's melancholy. How did that writer reference the president's melancholy?
The essay was about Lincoln and Meriwether Lewis, comparing and contrasting them. Meriwether Lewis, the half of Lewis and Clark, almost certainly killed himself. It's some people doubt it, but it's almost certain that he did. And Lincoln was suicidal, but did not kill himself. This essay looked at how Lincoln managed to live through the brush with suicide, and what we might learn by looking at these two very, very similar and very different cases.
Wow. When did Lincoln contemplate suicide?
There are two times that we know of. The first one, he was 26, and the second, when he was 32. Both these periods are actually pretty similar in their rough outline. There was all kinds of external stress on Lincoln, combined with what seems to have been a temperamental inclination to what we now call depression, what was more often called in his time melancholy, or at one point hypochondriasis, which was a name for one of the aspects of the melancholic disease.
Yeah. You know, in persons with depression who commit suicide, it has been said they often become socially isolated. But this did not happen with Lincoln. Do you think that the fact that Lincoln sought out company, that helped him through these very dark periods when he was thinking about suicide?
You know, the thing about depression is that it's, you know, we have many ideas about it that exist in sort of isolation, that depression is this or that, when in fact depression can be both this and that. Mm. Depression can be extremely isolating, and depression can also force you into you know, greater intimacy. I mean, if you're suffering terribly and you spend the day in bed, that's isolating. If you're suffering terribly and you go, you know, crying to your friends for help in despair, then it can actually increase the connections between you and those friends. And with Lincoln, I think we see both these things in the midst of these breakdowns. It was isolating. He stopped working for brief periods both times, and there was a great deal of worry about him. At the same time, he came out of these periods even closer to the people around him because he showed them what was happening with him, and he asked for their help, and they responded.
Yeah. How was melancholy viewed in 19th century America?
In many respects, it's very much the way we view it. It's a trouble that comes on people from no apparent cause and without apparent cure. And that's one of the fundamental aspects of melancholy, and very much resonates with the modern idea of depression. The one significant difference is that there was an understanding in Lincoln's time that melancholy was both a temperament and that temperament was connected to a disease. So, for instance, everyone was thought to have a certain temperament, one of the four basic temperaments descending from this idea of the four basic humors from Greek medicine. And melancholy was one of those temperaments. And if you were a melancholy character, you were going to be prone to sadness and self-criticism and so forth. But you also were going to be a potential for insight and depth and sensitivity. There was this mix of good characteristics and bad characteristics, so to speak, with all the temperaments. Sanguine people tended to be cheerier, but they also tended to be more hot-headed and impulsive. So the idea is that you have this character with good and bad sides, and that one of the troubling aspects of a melancholy character is that you're prone to the disease of melancholia, which is very much like what we call major depression today. And yet, the fact that it was connected in the popular mind with this temperament allowed for a more subtle and nuanced understanding of the way that melancholy, as they called it then, intersected with a whole person's life, the way that these profound periods of collapse might be just moments on a much spots in a much broader landscape.
Hmm. You know, given the hardships people endured, that Lincoln endured. His mother died when he was a boy of 9. He outlived a sister and a brother. If you've visited New Salem, which is now a park, I mean, it's got sidewalks and lawn, but you can see how horrible, you can imagine how horrible life was there that winter, when it was so horrible. Is there any way to know how common melancholia was in Lincoln's time?
Well, sure. I mean, you can get a sense of it in the culture, and it was not terribly uncommon. We do know that Lincoln was an unusual case because of the way that people reacted to him. You know, one of my questions early on in my research was, you know, am I just misunderstanding something about the way people describe him? Are they just saying something about him that was actually extremely ordinary? And I could tell that they weren't, because they would say things like, he was then the most depressed man I'd ever seen, or he was so radically and thoroughly beaten down. These kind of superlatives are very common in a accounts of Lincoln. You know, it's true that the times were hard in many respects, and yet there were also aspects of early 19th century life that were superior to our own. And, of course, people there didn't know anything different. We tend to look back on another time and see all the things that they're missing, all the advantages and so forth. And not knowing that, their lives were as their lives were, and there were cheery people and there were gloomy people, just as there are today in the midst of all our so-called advantages.
Yeah. In Lincoln's writings, in conversations that later came and were reported and put down on paper, how did Lincoln talk about his...
Well, in different ways. In the midst of his second breakdown, he was very explicit about how beaten down he was. He wrote that he was the most miserable man living, and he went on to say that he wasn't sure he could make it. He wasn't sure he could live. And he said he would have to feel better in order to live, and that he feared that he'd never feel better. Other times, he was more subtle or more sublimated. A lot of what we know about Lincoln's melancholy comes from the things that people said about him and their, you know, observing the way that he looked and acted and the things that he said. But the strange thing is that, you know, while we're trying to get at an inner state, ultimately that inner state is ineluctable and mysterious, and we have to be satisfied with these material manifestations of it, which are, unfortunately, you know, rather superficial compared to stuff of human feeling, and yet they're all we have to go on in the historical record, and indeed they're really all we have to go on today, too. I mean, you know nothing of me except for what I'm able to put into words, even though my experience is so much broader than that. And, of course, you know, if we're in the same room, you might see things about me that would create sensations in you, and that you might try and capture those in words. Another imperfect method, and yet it is something. And this is a lot of what we have in the record of Lincoln: people straining to describe their experience of being in the room with him, straining because they see that it's not very easy and maybe impossible to account for this man who's, for instance, as he often did in his late 30s and 40s, sitting in the corner off by himself, his knees drawn up against his chest, his head down in his hands or pressed up against his thighs, and, you know, with this look that, and this feeling emanating from him that people took to be just the most gloomy feeling that they'd ever felt.
Oh. Well, he went into politics, obviously, and, you know, that's something that would strike me as being unlikely for someone who was, like Lincoln was, suffered so with melancholy. Why do you think he went into politics? Why did he, you know, why that ambition, why that public sphere?
Well, the origin of the ambition, I think, is ultimately mysterious. It was just there, and it seemed to have been there from a very young age. He wanted more than what the circumstances of his life were obviously going to offer. He wanted to be an educated kid at a time when many people weren't, and he wanted to leave this rural lifestyle at a time when many people were content to stay. In fact, that was the way most Americans lived, in these subsistence farms that Lincoln grew up on. But he left that decidedly behind, and he was always sort of searching for more. It's there are aspects of that certainly resonate with the broader experience of melancholy, which is so much more than just these sort of moments of low energy or low mood or sadness. It's so much more than the negative, as it's often made out to be. We think of depression as sort of missing this or that, not being able to do this or that, when in fact it's often connected to a real desire and hunger for things that can't be seen or touched, but which someone nevertheless believes to be there and suffers in its absence. This is somewhat abstract, what I'm saying, and yet anyone who's listening who knows the experience will immediately recognize that a lot of my book is trying to translate this experience into terms that the people who haven't experienced it are able to understand it too. But there are all these kind of polarities that are set up that I just don't think really apply to the world as human beings experience it. This idea that depressed people are not social people. I don't think that's the case, actually. I think often the most social people, the people who are the most talented at drawing other human beings to them, often also have these private moments of great despair. Certainly the funniest people who are most able to make us laugh, have very high rates of depression. And it's, you can stack up all these sort of opposites against each other and puzzle over them, or you can concede that this is a much more complex and really more interesting and satisfying landscape than it's made out to be in the sort of cookie cutter diagnostic language in which it's so often discussed.
Yeah. Well, all we have is those words.
Yeah. Well, we also have stories. That's the advantage of telling the story of a life, to try and get at the experience of melancholy and more broadly to get at the experience of human suffering. That's a big part of the project of the book.
Yeah. Well, in the end, you say what drew you to the story of Lincoln and his melancholy was a sense of connection to this larger than life character as a person.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to get to know him and his experience. In the beginning, it didn't matter to me so much that he had gone on to do such great work. I suppose I was operating on me unconsciously. It's always there when you think of Lincoln. But consciously, I was just curious about what kind of life he lived, and what his day-to-day experience was, and it turned out that investigating that and getting to know that also taught me some things about what he did and what he thought and the role that he played in this great conflict over slavery and the dissolution of the Union.
Mm. Do you see it as preparing him ultimately to face the?
Sure, in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite so linear, because it's not as though he suffered and therefore the suffering prepared him and therefore he went and did this great work and left the suffering behind. The aspects of his character that were that brought him suffering also brought him in contact with certain abilities and capacities that strongly affected this work that he did. And yet then the work that he did also brought him even greater suffering. So it's part of this bigger system that I'm trying to disentangle and sort of shine the light on.
Yeah. You argue that Lincoln ultimately drew strength from his depression. Maybe you would talk about that.
Yeah, I think so. There are a couple of specific things that I turn my attention to. And their strengths, they're also bound up in weaknesses. The strength to be able to see the pain and difficulty of reality as it is, it's a profound strength, and we don't necessarily recognize it. People who see the glass half full, to use the cliche, or who sort of see the cloud off in the horizon on an otherwise sunny day, they're not necessarily so fun to be around, and we very often don't enjoy that aspect of ourself that's sort of pointing out the potential for danger or difficulty. But in certain circumstances, that danger or difficulty is real, and those people are really valuable, and that aspect of ourselves is really important too. And this is something that that applies to Lincoln's life. And when he became a major political figure, there are lots of people who wanted to ignore the problems, and there are lots of people who saw them who couldn't speak about them as forcefully with the same kind of moral passion and sense of personal involvement that Lincoln had. And a lot of his career was really devoted to not just proposing a certain path, but to beseeching all who could hear him to see that very real problems lay in front of them, and that they required attention. There's some others, but I've already gone on long enough. Maybe I'll stop and see. Lincoln's creativity and his humility and sort of spiritual view, those are the other two major points that I deal with at the end of the book. And perhaps we'll come up another point in this conversation.
Okay. Well, let me reintroduce you. Our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine is essayist and editor Joshua Wolf Schenck. He is the author of Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us with questions, comments. Here are the phone numbers. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the phone number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Tell us about the research you did for this book. This must have been a very difficult subject to research.
It was, just because there were so many different texts to draw on. The foundation for the study is in Lincoln, the primary material of Lincoln's life, so letters and oral histories, anything that sheds light on the life of Lincoln as he lived it. I read lots of books and followed footnotes to their end point and so forth. There's also a big project to understand the tenor of Lincoln's time, the what they thought about psychology and medicine, and all of these aspects of a human life that come up in the story of a person's melancholy. What do they think in that time, and what do they do? And then there was some study of modern psychology too, not so much with theory as with empirical studies that seem to very clearly elucidate something that applied to Lincoln's case.
Hmm. Well, speaking of the tenor of the day, I think I had thought previously, I'm re-examining this, that the urge to talk about it, to talk about it publicly, is very much part of our day. Was it part of Lincoln's day?
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln was really remarkably open compared to what we might imagine as an analog, modern, you know, analog for his character, sort of, you know, a political figure, ambitious guy, kind of a macho guy, a great athlete. He had this tender side and this confessional side, and certainly around the time of these two breakdowns and continuing afterwards, he often did tell people very directly and openly how he was feeling and how he was struggling. He certainly also kept a lot of secrets and was a great mystery to people who knew him, but the fact that he was having a hard time was not a secret at all. Of course, you know, as the story goes on, there's this other very strong element, which is the discipline that Lincoln brought to bear in living a life. He came to realize that his suffering was not going to go away, and he needed to live with it, and very deliberately developed these strategies that would help him do so. And then finally, this open sort of openness and insight into the nature of his own condition, and that dogged, diligent work to live in the world, kind of combined in his character and combined with this searching yearning to do something meaningful. And these are three sort of essential elements of his character that came together around the work that he did as a political leader and president.
We have a couple of listeners now waiting to talk with us. Let's go first to someone on a cell phone outside of Champaign-Urbana, line 4. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Enjoying the conversation. Since I am on a cell in the middle of a blizzard here, I'll make a quick comment and hang up and listen. I was interested in the conversation so far, and I was just thinking what aspect, positive or negative, would Lincoln's wife have played? In other words, you know, I'm thinking here's Abraham Lincoln suffering with depression and perhaps would turn to his wife for assistance or support, and basically you're talking about somebody who now would be, I guess, clinically psychotic. And, you know, would that have increased his depression? I mean, that would seem to be like an awful 1-2 punch to deal with and very difficult to get over. And I'll go ahead and hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Mary Lincoln was also a troubled woman, and she changed too over the course of her life. The psychosis that the caller referred to was certainly manifest after Lincoln's death, and may also have been a bit in the White House years, but before that, she lived her own varied and complex life. But it's certainly true that she was a troubled woman, and that they were troubled together, and that in many respects, they seem to have exacerbated one another's trouble. Lincoln seemed to become more distant and isolated in her presence, and she often became more agitated at that distancing in her husband.
Yeah. Is there something we can learn from Mary Todd Lincoln in terms of women's experience of melancholy in the 19th century?
I'm glad you asked. I think that's an important story, and I hope someone will take that up. I had so much to do to eliminate Lincoln's side of this story that I really only dealt with her with respect to her direct influence on him and their sort of direct involvement. But there is a whole story that that could be told about her and her psychology if one were to understand the all the context around her.
Mm.
And it's certainly gender and mental illness is a hugely important thing.
Yeah. Well, I lived in Springfield for a time. And, you know, in Springfield, you're surrounded by these names. They're everywhere. And there are, you know, I mean, it's history right there, down the street, around the corner. And Mary Todd Lincoln, I think, has become a caricature. And I always thought her story was interesting and sad, but somehow she's been, she hasn't been given a fair shake.
She's definitely a hard one. The, you know, whether she's been treated fairly or unfairly, it's hard to say because a lot of the problems in the work on Mary Lincoln actually I think is an over defensiveness, or just a defensiveness, sort of trying to explain away her troubles that ends up I think. Distorting her life all the more, but she certainly has been a dramatically controversial figure, and was so in her lifetime, in her husband's lifetime too. The controversy that she was involved with, there was had a lot to do with the material of this study. This is something I disentangle in the afterword to the book, but she had her own view of her husband's inner life, and didn't particularly want a lot of the things that we talk about in this book to be talked about.
Hmm. Another woman who is part of the Lincoln story, Ann Rutledge. What can you tell us about her?
Well, Ann Rutledge was a young woman who died in the summer of 1835, and her death preceded Lincoln's first breakdown. And a lot of people have assumed that because there's this, because these two things happen around the same time, that he was suicidal because of her death. And when in fact, all we know is that these two things were happening around the same time, and it certainly it makes sense that he was responding to some extent to her death, but it may have been only one of many triggers, and it may have been but a small trigger compared to the sort of underlying material that it set off. The caricature of Ann Rutledge as Lincoln's long-lost love dominated a lot of early accounts, and then there was this counter-reaction that said, so far overblown and maybe she, you know, maybe they hardly knew each other and therefore this whole business about him being depressed must also be a myth. In fact, his reaction and his depression after her death is pretty clear and hard to dispute. And the only place where when we go off base is when we start assuming that we know exactly why he was so depressed and that it had to do with a relationship with her. That's, to whatever extent it did exist, if it did exist, is basically lost to us. They knew each other. They lived in the same small village. And that's more or less all we know.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Indiana on line 4. Hello.
Hi there. I was just curious, in light of the recent news where Lincoln was said to have homosexual tendencies, what aspect did that play on not only his relationship with his wife, but also in his depression? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Lincoln is gay business is a thorny thing because the the book that you're referring to is a terrible book that just is in the case is really a very groundless. The things that Lincoln did that have been interpreted as gay, homosexual, are things that most men of that time did. That doesn't mean that we know for sure he wasn't attracted to men. We don't know for sure that he didn't have sex with men. But it's all so much guesswork either way. I really try to stay out of that as much as I can in this book. I mean, there are opportunities for speculating about historical figures and their desires and their secrets is endless. But it's not really history. It's some other discipline.
Yeah. Well,
history is when you take the facts and interpret them reasonably and try and make sense of them and translate them in terms that make sense to us and can teach us something.
Yeah, I think you point that out nicely at the beginning of the book. I do believe you out and out say this is not psychobiography.
Yeah, psychobiography is associated with sort of taking a modern theory and looking back in the past and sort of explaining all the things that happened there according to this modern theory, which actually is something like what C.A. Tripp does in this book that alleges Lincoln is gay. He's applying, in his case, he's applying this sort of sex research theory developed by Kinsey in the 50s. And the applications to Lincoln's life are just wildly overdrawn.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champagne. Line one, hi.
Hello, this is a fascinating topic. My question to you is, was Lincoln's melancholy or depression widely known in the political circles in which he ran? The reason I ask is I recall that in the campaign of 1972, when George McGovern, the Democratic nominee for president, chose United States Senator Thomas Eagleton from Missouri as his running mate, and it became known that he had undergone electric shock treatment for depression, major depression, and that was the kiss of death for Senator Eagleton, even with a very liberal Democratic nominee for president. I'm curious as to how Lincoln was able to rise to the highest levels of our democracy, namely the United States presidency, if he were considered, and I'm putting this in quotes, crazy, end quote.
Well, he wasn't considered crazy, and the you know, melancholy and insanity were not equated, and his own private struggles were not part of his public profile when he emerged as a national political figure in the late 1850s. To the extent that people knew about it, they didn't make much of it. And to the extent that it affected Lincoln's life, his political life, it seems to have been beneficial to the extent that it strengthened his bonds with the people around him, which was an enormous political advantage to him. But there's it just never became a part of the public conversation the way that it did with Eagleton, and certainly it didn't have, you know, there was no scandal of the sort that affected Eagleton. And to some extent, I think it's a product of changing times and changing mores, and an increasing sort of medicalization of mental trouble as opposed to a view of it as part and parcel of human experience.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call. After writing this book, how do you think about depression in terms of what might make one fit or unfit for public office and for the highest office?
I think it really depends on not so much on the depression, but on the character of the person who has it. Now, people who suffer from depression might respond to it by learning how to take care of themselves and learning to get to know where they come from and what they want. And it might deepen their attachment to the world around them. And it might make them the kind of person that I would trust all the more. Someone might also respond to their depression by becoming increasingly isolated, increasingly sort of split between some public self and some private self that remains totally hidden. You know, depression can lead you to be very selfish and infantile. And I mean, there are all kinds of things about it that could be troubling. So it's not the depression itself so much as, you know, what the person with the depression has been able to do.
Yeah, well, it seems in Lincoln's case, it was a clarifier. It made him more determined, and yet it also, it seems, how could I say this? I'm trying to think of the word humility. It gave him a greater humility. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, in many respects it did. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The humility in Lincoln's story is really is the most basic lesson. To the extent that looking at him through the lens of his melancholy helps us see who he was, this is one of the most important things to see, that he increasingly saw himself, even though he became increasingly powerful in the material world, he increasingly saw himself as subject to forces that were beyond his control. Mm-hmm. And this was something that he understood, you know, very viscerally and personally in his private life, but that also was drawn out by the trials of his public work. That, you know, despite his best efforts, things just seemed to get worse and worse all through the war, all through this long, gruesome war that took hundreds of thousands of lives and really seemed to be an apocalypse as it was happening.
Mm.
And Lincoln was able to do two things. He was able to pay attention to his own meager capacities and to do the work that he was capable of with great determination and great energy, all the while that he saw himself subject to something that was much bigger than him and more powerful than him. It's really a very humbling thing to witness and edifying too.
Mm. We have to wrap up here. Is there anything that we haven't touched on this afternoon that you would really like to say?
We touched on Lincoln's humor, but for some reason I want to emphasize that, maybe because it's a dark, cold day up in New York City where I'm speaking to you from, and I suspect it's pretty dark out there too. And you know, all of this gloomy talk and talk of difficulty just makes me kind of long for the thing that Lincoln longed for in his dark moods, which was a good joke or story that would that kind of take all of the suffering and kind of just turn it around a little bit and let you see it from another point of view and let you laugh. This is not, you know, this is a story of a full human being with a full human life, and his sadness is much more than just a sad story. It's also a story about how to how to live well in the face of sadness.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good way to wrap up here this afternoon. Thank you. Joshua, thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Joshua Wolfschenk is the author of Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you much, Celeste. From the Board of Trade and the Kansas City Board of Trade this afternoon, futures finished the day lower in the wheat pits, but the corn and the beans were higher. Beans staging a pretty decent rally today, in fact, finishing up anywhere between 7 and 9.5 cents on the afternoon. From the Kansas City Board of Trade, December wheat futures. This is the hard red winter wheat at 365 high today, a low at 357. Settlement price at 357.5. They were down 4.5 cents. July futures 353.5, the high, the low at 347.5, and a settlement price at $3.49. They were down 2.25 on the day. From the soft red winter wheat pit at the Chicago Board of Trade, December contract 299.5, the high, the low at 94.5. And a settlement price there at 95.5. They were off 1.75 cents today. The March futures, the 315 high, low at 309. Settlement price 312.25, off 1. May contract in the wheat pit at the board, 324 the high, the low at 318.5. Soft red winter wheat settled the May contract at 321.25, down 3/4. And July futures, the harvest month, 333.5 the high, the low at 327.5. Settled at 330.5. They were off 2 cents for the day. September contract down 2.5 at 338.5. From the corn pit, December futures 188.75 the high, the low at 186.75. Settlement price at 188.25, up 1.25 on the day. March futures 202.5 the high, low at $2.25. Settlement price at 201.75. They were up 3/4. May futures 211.5 the high, the low at 209.25. Settled 210.75, up 1.25. And July corn 219.75 the high, the low at 217.5. Settled at $2.19, up 3/4. September futures 228.5 the high, the low at 226.75. Settlement price at $2.28. They were up 1.25 in December contract. 239.75 the high, the low at 237.75. Settlement price there at $2.39. Up 3/4 for next year's Dease corn. Now December oats, 210.5, the high, the low at 209, settlement price at 210. They were up 1 cent for the day, and the March oats up 2.5 cents, 198, the high, the low at 194.5, a settlement price at 197.5. Soy complex, January soybeans, $5.68, the high, the low at 568 for an 8 cent trading range, settled closer to the top at 566.75. They were up 7.75 on the day. March futures 576, the high, the low at 68. Settlement price at $5.75.5. They were up 8. And the May beans 580, the high, the low at 573. Settlement price at 579.75, up 8.5 cents. July contract of 587, high, low at 578.75. Settlement price at 586.5, up 9.5 cents. And the August soybeans, 585 the high, low at 582. Settlement price at $5.85. They were up 4 cents for the day. August futures in the bean pit, 585 the high, the low at 582. Settlement price at 585, up 4 cents. And the September futures were up 7 today, 586.5 the high, the low at 83. Settlement price at $5.86.5. Once again, for that September contract in the bean pit, 7 higher. November futures of next year, 592.5 the high, low at 585.5. And the November contract settled at $5.91 for 2006. They were up 7. Soybean meal futures, December contract, 179.50 the high, the low at 174. A settlement price at $179.40 a ton, up $5.80. The January futures were up $6 even at $179.30, the high at $79.50 and the low at $173.50. December bean oil, $21.10 the high, the low at $20.85, settlement price at $20.97. They were down 3 for the day. And the January contract, $21.40 high, the low at $21.04. January bean oil settled at $21.22. They were up 3. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Todd, it was a mixed day today on the Merc, and I'm going to run down the numbers, and then immediately following that, we'll tell you about some more early dismissals, early school dismissals because of the weather. January feeder cattle, the high 115.87.5, the high, the low 114.75, the settlement 114.77.5, down 92.5. March 115.20, the high 113.90, the low 114.77.5. $1,410, the settlement at down 95. April, $113.75, the high, $112.80, the low, $113.05, the settlement at down 55. December, live cattle, $93.05, the high, $92.25, the low, $92.42.5, the settlement, that down 32.5. February, $96.35, the high, $95.45, the low, $95.50, the settlement, that down 47.5. Lean hogs finished higher today. December, $63.20. That's the high. That was the high. The low was $62.80. The settlement, $62.87.5. That up 20. February, $67.52.5. The high, $66.20. The low, $66.62.5. The settlement, that up 57.5. April, 70 even, the high, $68.85, the low, the settlement, $69.05, that up 12.5. May, $71.05, the high, $70.30, the low, $70.82.5, the settlement, that up 12.5. February, pork bellies, $86.70, the high, $85.25, the low, $86.10, the settlement. So February bellies finished down 17.5. The Dow is off 65 points, the NASDAQ down 14, the S&P 500 down 4.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Okay, now let's run down the early dismissals. Heritage District 8 closed this afternoon at 1:25. Villa Grove will close at 2 o'clock. And Ogden and Prairie View Grade School will also close at 2 o'clock this afternoon. In Tolono, the schools closed in the 1 o'clock hour. So to the story with the schools in St. Joe Grade School and St. Joe Ogden High School. Also, Monticello schools dismissed during the 1 o'clock hour. St. Thomas More and Champaign dismissed in the noon hour this afternoon. And the Isaac Walton League of America meeting scheduled for tonight has been canceled. And I'm right now being handed a fresh piece of paper. So the Keep Illinois Warm workshop scheduled for 7 o'clock tonight at Parkland has been canceled. The next workshop will be held on December 13th. At Parkland. No evening classes tonight for Urbana Adult Education. Mohammed Seymour schools are remaining open, but all extracurricular activities, practices, and events for the district have been canceled. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned this. Yes, I did. Villa Grove schools closing at 2 o'clock. It's coming up on 2 o'clock. You're tuned to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Let me run down the weather advisories we have at the moment. A snow advisory in effect for most of Illinois today into tonight. Snow advisory in effect for northern Indiana later today and tonight. A winter